Hello, friends. We are interrupting Healing Hearts to remind you April is not just a month. It's a call to action. This month, we celebrate Volunteer Appreciation and Child Abuse Prevention Month, recognizing those who give their time and hearts to protect our most vulnerable. Every child deserves a life filled with love, safety, and normalcy. But sadly, not every child experiences this. That's where we, as a community, step in. Our amazing volunteers are the unsung heroes working tirelessly to advocate for children's well-being. They're the voices that speak up, the hands that reach out, and the hearts that care deeply. But the fight against child abuse needs much more than just appreciation. It needs action. This April, we invite you to participate in our efforts to protect children, provide them with the normalcy they deserve, and advocate for their rights. Visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org to find out what you can do to amplify the voices of our volunteer advocates. Remember to engage with us on social media. Participate and protect, because every child deserves a champion, and that champion could be you. Now, back to Healing Hearts.
Really, at the end of the day, love, stability, and consistency with those. I say anybody can be a foster parent. They can make it work.
Hey there, friend. Welcome to Healing Hearts, where we understand the challenges of parenting children with behavioral, developmental, or emotional divergence. If you've ever struggled with fear, uncertainty, exhaustion, isolation, or even feelings of guilt along your parenting path, we get it. Here, it's all about guiding you through the highs and lows of raising kids who need equal parts love, patience, and empathy. Our approach is a little different. Healing Hearts was created and continues to be hosted by dynamic high school and college students who consider the support of vulnerable or at-risk children and their families critical to student success. What can you expect from us? Encouragement and honest talk with terrific guests, sharing relatable stories and smart tips to make your journey smoother. We also focus on parents and children's mental and emotional health because it's vital. You'll get simple, effective strategies to keep you strong and positive, because parenting is a heroic act. And when advice isn't enough, we point you towards extra help and resources. Stay with us, tune in, and let's take this journey together. We are here to back you up, boost your spirits, and help you confidently face each day. Welcome to the Healing Hearts family. We are so happy to have you here.
Today's guest, Rebecca Korda, started her child welfare career at ChildNet in 2012, initially as a case manager and then moving through roles as a treatment coordinator and licensing specialist, where she ensured children's needs were met and foster parents complied with regulations. Drawing on her work experiences and her lived experience as a licensed foster parent, Rebecca focuses on educating potential foster parents, supporting those facing challenges, and highlighting the importance of guidance and community resources for foster families to succeed. Welcome to Healing Heart.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love what you guys are doing and grateful to be here.
Of course. So we would like if you could share a little bit about your background and journey with our listeners to begin with. Sort of like your evolution of your career within the foster and dependency system.
Yeah, so I guess before my first job, which like you mentioned was as a case manager at ChildNet, I started the idea of my career, which meant volunteering for different, you know, or community organizations in high school and middle school. And from there, I almost immediately noticed that kids and different families in my community were in need, and I was someone who would be able to provide resources and help support them. It became clearer and clearer through college, grad school, and now in my professional career that I would be able to serve in a similar capacity.
So can you explain a little bit about how your first job sort of shaped your career path going forward, about the training and recruitment and how that works in the arena of foster care.
Yeah, my first job out of grad school was a crash course of the foster care system, the dependency system, and it had so many joys and challenges because now I was able to apply all of this school that I had just done in the real world, I could say. So it was court hearings, staffings, making sure biological families got referrals to services and community resources so they could potentially reunify successfully with their kids that were in foster care. And so it wasn't until 2 years into that job that I realized, oh wow, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done within the system. And so shifting that to my focus being in the child welfare specific with foster parents. So that was a while ago. Yeah, I've been at my current role for 8 years, and before that being at ChildNet. It's all really great experiences that just have built on each other over time.
So you talk a little bit about your current job. Can you explain a little bit about the difference between the work that you're doing now versus what you were doing before?
Yeah, so there are contracted providers, ChildNet being in Palm Beach and Broward County, the community-based program, and they contract other agencies. So the agency I work for is one of many foster care agencies in the Broward and Palm Beach County community that trains, provides support, oversight to foster parents from day one, they're expressing interest. To the day when we're calling them to say, congratulations, you're a licensed foster parent. We think we found a match for you. We think we found a child that might be a good match for your family. That's a little bit about my job now. It encompasses everything from you're interested in potentially being a foster parent to congratulations, you're licensed.
So, talking about that process, how long on average does it take for a family to become licensed?
I would say on average, it's about 100 days. There is an 8-week virtual training course. There are compliance, so DCF regulations, licensing standards, so documentation, training hours, and the home study process. So making sure that people are prepared to have a healthy home environment to bring the kids into. From start to finish, I would say an average of 100 days. Some finish quicker than that, some take time, but that's the average.
So, if there is a prospective foster family, what sort of questions should they ask themselves before starting this potentially long process of 100 days?
I think at the forefront of their mind should be their relationship status. Are they married? Are they single? It doesn't matter. It just matters that you have that support. You have, that family-oriented lifestyle also. Your work schedule might be really an important consideration if you're going to be dropping a child off to and from school or daycare. You want to be that person for them. So your work schedule and financial stability is a big one too. Of course, foster parents are reimbursed for the care they provide their kids, but they have to be financially stable as well. So I would keep those things in mind when starting to consider if this is for them. Really, at the end of the day, love, stability, and consistency with those. I say anybody can be a foster parent. They can make it work.
Yes. So to sort of go off this idea that anybody could be a foster parent, could you talk a little bit about sort of debunking the idea that only special people can foster? Is there a standard foster parent profile?
Yeah, I mean, I will use my husband and myself as an example. No, there isn't. If you're someone with that compassion and patience, and you can provide a child with a consistent, daily routine and make it inviting and inclusive for them, there, are qualifications, of course. Someone with some disqualifying background history, that would be a barrier to the licensing process. But it is very important for me. Knowing who foster parents are, it doesn't take an extraordinary person. It's just, setting aside your personal conveniences, maybe, or what you've been used to, and adjusting accordingly. You need to put that child now, because they're in your home, at the forefront of what's going on, and they take the priority.
So, you mentioned that you are a foster parent, and we sort of touched on that in the beginning. Can you talk a little bit about what prompted you to become a foster parent and the work-family life balance that you maintain just to sort of help educate the potential parents out there?
Is there a balance? I don't know. I would say just taking it one day at a time is what works for my family, but not being too focused on what's going to happen or what could happen because the dependency system has so many uncontrollable variables with court and decision making that, that impact the kids. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's just something that I believe strongly in that you can just take it a day at a time and figure it out.
Has your lived experience being a foster parent informed how you recruit and train prospective?
It's made me a better professional. Absolutely. When foster parents call me to vent or need extra support or resources or just have a question, I can combine my personal lived experience and my professional experience and help them in a deeper way than I was able to before. Becoming a foster parent, I just wanted to walk the walk. I was doing a lot of studying and learning and work in that field, but I wasn't really living it in the same way. So it's easy to tell a foster parent in crisis, oh, it's okay, just, tomorrow's another day. But to really experience that and make that commitment to a child in your home, it deepened my understanding of when I say that, what it really means, and how people will feel supported.
So, to go back to the understanding about how foster care works and sort of understanding the steps that prospective parents or families might have to take, how do you recommend families start to build that connection with a child entering the home? And how are children matched with families? These are some sort of common questions.
Yeah, I would. So I'll start with that matching process. Once a family gets licensed, the foster agency will call and either discuss by phone or email a child profile. It may or may not have their picture. It's going to say their age, date of birth, different likes, dislikes, specific needs they might have, emotional, behavioral, educational, medical, things like that, and the reason they were removed. So past traumas to keep in mind, things like that. And with that information, the foster parent will have to say, yes, we accept. And so what we don't do is allow the foster parent to meet with the child beforehand. It's not a interview. It's a yes, you're willing and able to accept this child in your home now, or no, with a heavy heart, you just don't know if this is the right match for you and your family right now. And when a child transitions into your home, that's a big adjustment, right? If you have biological, adopted, other, adults or kids in the home, it's going to impact them too. So the overall experience of being in foster care itself is very out of control. It's adding to trauma. You're coming to live with strangers that you don't know if they're going to be good to you. So validating feelings, riding that emotional wave with them, the ups and downs are so important, and giving control when you can. It's so easy to say, what do you want to do for dinner tonight? It's so easy to say, what's an activity you want to do this weekend? What's something fun you're interested in doing? So not questioning them, but really the active listening piece is helpful to building relationships.
So it seems that a lot of the focus should be on the child when they're coming into the home. There obviously will be worries and anxiety around how it will change the dynamic, but sort of having that understanding that this child is also going into this strange place, and we need to have a little bit of compassion and understanding for that as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you really said it well because kids don't come into our lives to fill a void in us, right? We're there to fill a need in their lives. So it's finding that balance too between the foster parent's mental health, right? Because this is stressful, but it is important at the end of the day. This child is the focus.
So, to sort of touch on how stressful it can be if there are other biological children in the home or just other people in general, what are the best ways to interact with the other people in the family or house while fostering, ways that can help the foster kid feel more inclined to connect with others. Is there any, you know, practices that you might know of that can help other parents if they have other siblings in the house or something like that?
Yeah, there are some. In the foster parent training curriculum, there is like a regional mandated curriculum we use, and we've also been implementing trust-based relational intervention. It's a curriculum that focuses on that trust, connection, things like that with the kids, and part of that curriculum does speak to sibling connection and foster sibling connection and giving grace to a foster child when they don't want that. If you're going to say you're part of our family as a foster parent, you also have to recognize and validate that they might have siblings that are not living in your home that you need to maintain the connection with too. So there's compromise for sure to be had with that dynamic.
What do you think are the top three most challenging obstacles that foster families face and sort of some suggestions for overcoming them?
Yeah, this one's a tough one. There are, I mean, let's just start with the foster care system in general. There's a lot of things foster parents can't control, right? We're not technically legal guardians of our children. We're just helping for now. And so if the court says, well, today's the day they're leaving, you might not get, you know, that court system, I'd say, you know, they're really working towards benefiting the child's best interest. But that can be tough. We see retention is a hard one too. Sometimes foster parents only foster for 2-3 years and then they say, oh, I can't take it anymore. I can't do it. That caregiver fatigue, right? I guess another one that comes to mind would be the compliance. So to be a foster parent is one thing, and then to retain your foster parent license and renew it every year takes time, you know, takes continued education trainings. And if people aren't committed to doing that, then that can be tough.
So those three obstacles make a lot of sense. And I was sort of wondering how the system has changed over the past decade and how it's able to sort of influence the different obstacles that these parents face, because of a lot of it is retention or, you know, stuff like that. How is the system able to change that?
Yeah, in the last decade, we've seen a lot of incorporating technology, faster access to resources because you're not faxing the referral and waiting for the reply on the other end of the line of the machine. You're actually just sending the email or uploading it into a system and it's getting processed quickly. That's been really helpful when it comes to getting biological families the services they need to reunify with the kids. And while the kids are in foster homes, it's great because there's much less of a wait time for getting mental health services they need brought into the home and supporting them. So technology has helped a lot. I guess when it comes to training too, there's more prevention. So trying to give services and avoid unnecessary removals of children into foster care. In that sense, early intervention and prevention measures have been advancing in the last decade, and trauma-informed care. Better training for foster parents has been really, really helpful.
So we touched upon in the last question a little bit about support for the children and a lot of trauma-informed care now for the parents. What type of support system should a prospective foster parent have in place? And does that look different if they're in different marital statuses? Or what do you think is a good support system that people should be aware of?
Right. Single or not? Yeah, if you're single, I would say have that second person, but that doesn't have to be, you know, a relationship or a partner. That could just be a neighbor, a friend, a coworker, someone who's willing to be an approved backup babysitter for you. They might go through the background screening process and say, I'm willing to help transport, you know, if you're late at work one day, I'm willing to help come to your house and babysit so you can take a walk around the block and get some fresh air on a tough day. So that is definitely a form of support. I wanted to also mention things like 211, Children's Services Council. All of those are great resources too. for foster parents. So it's not just having, a backup babysitter available, but it's also knowing where to get those support services for yourself also.
Yeah, so that kind of goes into my next question about resources that you recommend for foster parents. What are some that you can think of potentially dealing with behavioral or emotionally divergent children?
Yeah, so when it comes to that specifically, I would say your pediatrician is a great go-to for advice, referrals, community resources. Even when it comes to organizations or community events that target specifically, like if your child has a specific diagnosis or a need, there's a group for that. Absolutely. Even if it's a parent support group on Facebook, even if it's a Speak Up for Kids website. Shout out to Speak Up for Kids website because you guys are doing great work too with resources available. And on a local level, libraries, parks and recreation, everyone's getting involved in making sure that they're supporting kids.
Are there any parent support groups that you would recommend?
Yeah, each foster parent agency tends to have their own specific support groups and events, but I would say FAPA, the Foster An Adoptive Parent Association, is a great resource for all foster parents, no matter what agency.
Thank you. So I kind of want to end this episode in a sort of uplifting manner. I think you answered a lot of questions that prospective foster parents might have about the system that maybe they didn't necessarily know. So I would want to know a little bit about a funny, happy, or aha moment you experienced along the way through your, past decade of working with the foster care system, whether as a case manager, licensing agent, recruiter, trainer, parent.
Yeah, I would say the advice I got from a therapist was children don't always act their age. Sometimes they act the age of their trauma. And that was an aha moment for me because it was just simple, insightful. I thought into the point of knowing even when you see, it could be a teenager in front of you, it's still a healthy perspective, right? You don't know what's going on inside at the moment, so to deepen compassion and patience, especially in those times, that was like an aha moment. But I have cried laughing with some of the kids and interactions with families. It's just so nice to see them be kids. A lot of kids just don't always get to enjoy that. They grow up very quickly for reasons known and unknown when they come into foster care, but it just is such a joy to see them be kids. And so that's been the big takeaway, the funny, happy moments, just day-to-day life.
Is there anything else that you would like to say that maybe wasn't asked that you'd like people to know?
I did want to add something about co-parenting because I think that not many people, when they want to become foster parents, think about the relationship they're going to have with biological families. And I would definitely encourage all foster parents out there to have a connection with your child's biological family, and just keep that in mind, and absolutely, in my opinion, deepen the relationship and attachment and connection you have with your foster child.
Sort of to go off of that a little bit, how do you recommend these foster parents go about starting that relationship?
So many different ways. It could be simple as just if you see each other at court, introducing yourself. There's actually a new mandate called a comfort call. And so there's actually a third party that allows the foster parent to connect with the biological parent when you have a foster child arrive to your home. And so the nice thing about that is you have that opportunity handed to you. You just have to take it and be positive and encouraging because this is something that's, really the worst time in a biological parent's life to have lost their child and now having to not know where they're sleeping, what's going on with them. So that comfort call is really important. And it could be something as simple as writing a letter, printing a picture, sending a card, things like that. A quick hello, goodbye, something positive when, you see them at a visit or something like that. Those are all different ways to have that relationship and connection.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. It has been a sincere pleasure having you on Healing Hearts. The breadth and depth of your knowledge and experience are remarkable, and I think our audience will definitely benefit from the information and the resources that you've shared. Thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be here.
Thank you so much. I wanted to add, if anyone is interested in like connecting with me more and talking about becoming a foster parent, I would love to hear from you. You all can find me at National Youth Advocate Program, and the website is fostercareinfo.org.
Yes, thank you so much for putting your plug in there.
Yeah, had to do it. Thank you so much, Sophia. I'm grateful you guys, like I said in the beginning, are doing awesome work for parents and families, and thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. We hope you found warmth and wisdom here to help you on your parenting odyssey. What is the best way to support us? Please subscribe, leave a review, and share Healing Hearts with anyone who could use this supportive community. Stay connected with us on social media or visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org for more information. Remember, a heart, like a garden, needs care to flourish. Until next time, you've been listening to Healing Hearts.